This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Sharpsburg, North Carolina, held its mayoral election in November. But some people in the small eastern North Carolina town couldn't vote. One of the precincts had just 12 ballots printed, even though the precinct is home to more than 200 eligible voters. As it turned out, only three votes decided the election, so the candidate who lost challenged the results in court. Sharpsburg is getting a redo of that mayoral election. That'll happen in May. But one reporter says this is something that could happen in other communities, and when it happens again, there might not be another chance to vote. Mike Cooper is an attorney and a writer. He wrote a piece for Scalawag magazine about the Sharpsburg mayoral race and joins me now. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about this a little bit. Only 12 ballots in one of the precincts. What happened?
So basically, it was just a computer glitch. In this one particular precinct in Wilson County, several different elections were going on. Sharpsburg is a small town that's divided into three counties, Wilson County, Edgecombe County, and Nash County. And for voters in about half of Sharpsburg, they're in Wilson County. That's where they vote. They had to go to this elementary school. And when folks showed up that morning, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, they got there, and within just about an hour of the polls being open, they ran out of ballots. A computer had printed 12 ballots for a place that was supposed to have 200 for that particular precinct. It was just a glitch, but it affected a number of people. When they got there, they were turned away. Precinct workers took their information, said, "We'd give you a call back." It took 2.5 hours to get more ballots, and so folks went back to where they live, 6 miles back in Sharpsburg. This was a big distance for them, and a number of them weren't able to come back, and they weren't able to vote that day.
Well, let's talk about that distance because, you know, those of us, particularly in urban areas, when you vote, I mean, you're never very far from the voting place, but things changed. There was an election law changed, and so their local voting spot moved. Tell us about that.
So folks who live in this particular area of Sharpsburg, they could live within walking distance of Town Hall. They could stand in their yard and see Town Hall across the railroad track, but they couldn't go there to vote anymore because the law had been changed. Elections are supposed to be administered now at the county level. So a town can't run their own election. So somebody who lives in Sharpsburg, North Carolina, this small town, Wilson County, eastern North Carolina, predominantly African-American, low-income area, you have to go to a different town to vote in your election. You have to go to this other place. And so a lot of these folks, there's no sidewalks along that road. A lot of folks who lack access to transportation, if you don't own a car, if you can't bum a ride from somebody, it makes it a lot tougher to vote. And there were stories from folks there who did try to do that, who did get a ride from somebody to go to the polls, but then they weren't able to vote that morning and they weren't able to get another ride that evening. It's tough to bum three rides in one day.
Well, yeah, and even the incumbent mayor who won the election, right, which was challenged, he even says the new voting precincts were unfair, right? You quoted him in your story.
Yeah, and he was at the hearing, and even he thought it was ridiculous what had happened. He was not too happy about it. So now there's going to be a new election. It's going to happen in May on the primary day here in North Carolina. So that's good for the folks of Sharpsburg that they get a second chance at that. In the election, it was decided by three votes. The challenging candidate protested after he lost. And the reason that they get to have a do-over is because the election was so close. And Josh can speak to this, but in North Carolina, when you can sort of prove that the outcome was affected by this irregularity, they order a new election. But in a lot of other communities across North Carolina where these problems happen, if the election's not close, you don't get a chance to vote again.
All right. Well, Josh is Josh Lawson. He's the general counsel for the North Carolina State Board of Elections and Ethics Enforcement, and he joins us now. Josh, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
It's very good to have you here. So is this something that can happen in other communities?
Well, look, in municipal elections, these are very, very narrow margin races. We had more than 100 races that were determined by 10 votes or fewer. We had almost 60 that were 5 votes or fewer, and we even had 5 ties. So that leaves no space for there to be any type of administrative error because almost any error is going to in some way be outcome determinative. This is the right final result, obviously, from a terrible set of circumstances in Sharpsburg, and this is something that the court had to do. because we don't have a sitting state board of elections at this time, and we haven't for the last 291 days.
What would have happened if we had had, if the state board of elections was impaneled?
The state board has certain authority. One, it is able, if something goes on during an election day, to extend voting hours into the evening. Because there was no state board, they were unable to do that. Secondly, after an election has already occurred, like it did here, they're the ones who hear election protests. They're the ones who decide whether an error was outcome determinative, and if so, order a new election. In following the 2015 elections, they actually ordered 5 new elections on that basis.
All right. And tell us why we don't have a state board of elections. Right now there's a lawsuit pending, right?
That's right. So we have been for more than a year now engaged in kind of an interesting back and forth where the legislative branch and the executive branch have been asking the judicial branch how much power the governor has to have over elections administration. And I should note that even though our agency is the topic of this litigation, we're not parties to it. I'm not trying to put any slant one way or the other on it. Yeah. But that fight has played out kind of in 3 acts. There was a first version of a bill that was going to change the way that our board was comprised. This would have been 4 legislatively appointed members and 4 gubernatorial members. That got struck down, said it didn't give the governor enough power. The next iteration was 4 Republicans, 4 Democrats, all appointed by the governor. But the court then struck that down as well, saying that that would potentially limit the governor's ability to effectuate his policy agenda. And so the final version that we have right now that is the subject of also some more controversy is 4 Republicans, 4 Democrats, and 1 unaffiliated, all appointed by the governor, all serving at the pleasure of the governor. He can remove for any purpose. But there's indications that that will be fought as well.
All right. And so all of this indicates is fallout from the number of changes that we've had in election law over the past 8 years or so. Those changes, again, many of them have been challenged in court. A number of them have been overturned by the court, some of them on the basis of racial motivation. So election law in North Carolina over the past few years has been a topic of conversation and controversy. And I want to bring Ted Shaw into the conversation now. He is the Julius L. Chambers Distinguished Professor of Law at the University of North Carolina Law School, also the director of the UNC Center for Civil Rights. Ted Shaw, welcome back.
Thank you, Frank. Good to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about what's going on here in the state. You heard about the Sharpsburg election, of course. Is this kind of thing happening more or less in the state? It sounds like a clerical error that led to this thing. This is the kind of thing that could happen anywhere, anytime, I suppose.
Well, it may be. Sometimes it's difficult to tell. I can't help but point to the fact that part of the Voting Rights Act that was struck down by the Supreme Court in 2013 in a case called Shelby County versus Holder required jurisdictions that had a history of discrimination to pre-clear changes in their electoral processes. So let's say, like I believe was part of what happened here, there are changes in polling stations. Those had to be pre-cleared. Under Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, either by federal court or by the Justice Department, Civil Rights Division in Washington, D.C., the Attorney General. That was struck down. And what we've seen both here in North Carolina and in other jurisdictions, particularly around the South but not exclusively, is a return to practices and policies that have had deleterious effects on African Americans. So this change may have been one of the things that would have been covered by Section 5 that no longer is available.
Certainly in one of the redistricting plans, a judge found that the courts were using surgical precision with regard to race to exclude and disenfranchise blacks. So it's not a far-fetched observation about the particular legislature and its point of view on elections, given the court record.
That's right. I mean, I think if we were living in a state in which we did not see other actions taken by the legislature and others that suppressed black political participation, we might look more kindly or give the benefit of the doubt to jurisdictions like this. But that's not the state we live in. So I think it's problematic. I'm glad that this appears to be on the way to a resolution nonetheless.
Well, this one is, but Mike, there was another case that came up along in the same election that also went to a Wake County court, and that had a different outcome, right?
Right, and Josh can speak to that. I believe it was Pitt County.
That's right.
Yeah. Tell us more about that one and what happened there, Josh.
Sure. So in Pitt County, there was a race that was actually decided by one vote. So an even stronger case to be made for some kind of problem. There were 10 people who were given the wrong ballots and allowed to participate. There, though, the county had already issued the certificates of election, and the court thought that they couldn't claw back that victory, even though 10 people participated that shouldn't have, and there was only a one-vote margin. You know, I will say that with Sharpsburg, you know, the allegation was not that there was some problem with the precinct line drawing. This was truly an administrative error that led to too few ballots being printed and available in the precinct. So I don't know that there hadn't been, at least in the court proceedings, any type of allegation of misconduct. It was administrative error.
Here's what I think the issue is, and having gone around Sharpsburg, I looked at the area. There actually weren't that many suitable places in that part of town to put a precinct. There was a reason why they had to put it in a different town. That goes to a different topic of administering elections. But there are always going to be mistakes. There are always going to be errors. In this case, there was technical error, the computer glitch. There was human error. The precinct workers didn't catch that. They didn't know until election day. And then there was institutional error, where there wasn't a state board of elections to extend hours that night. There's always going to be mistakes when you have almost 7 million registered voters in North Carolina and 2,700 precincts. Something's going to happen every election day. The power's going to go out somewhere. Something's going to happen. But when these problems arise, they typically happen in poor communities and communities of color. And those are the folks who are disenfranchised and have a tough time with that. So when we have the conversation about we need to extend early voting hours, we need more early voting days, we want Sunday voting, that's the reason folks are advocating for that. It's not because they want a partisan outcome. It's because if you don't make it easy to vote, when things happen on election day, folks will get turned away. And they won't be able to have their voice heard.
Well, one of the changes in election law that we've talked about but haven't really examined is this decision to take the election away from the locality, Sharpsburg, and make it a county jurisdiction. Ted, does that have any bearing on this particular case, the idea that people who had local authority over their local elections didn't in that case? Would that have mattered in this case?
Well, it could. The thing about this election, even if it was an administrative error, the optics don't look good. The impact on African American voters was clearly, disproportionate. I mean, they were the ones who were being affected here, and so there's already, as I indicated before, a lack of trust of this system because of the other changes that have been going on in the state that suppress black voting participation. So that's a problem. Now, if you move this to the, as you say, to the county level, I'm not sure that that's going to resolve the optics problem. I mean, it may give you more of an opportunity to have other places. I mean, you indicate that there's there were fewer good places to have polling places. It may give you more geographic places to place polling
But forgive me, they were voting in the town hall, right? I mean, that was where you did vote before the change.
For the longest time, and that law was changed, I believe, in 2011.
Well, that's what I mean. The change actually took away the most local opportunity.
Right. And I think there was reasoning behind it. They felt like we want a uniform standard. We want to be able to administer all these elections at the county level. And there was good intent behind that. Sharpsburg is just an example. I think there's 100 towns in North Carolina that split counties that are made up of different counties. And so they're the most affected by that. And Sharpsburg is an extreme example where you can live within a few hundred feet of town hall, but you have to drive 6 miles, a 20-minute drive, to be able to vote in your own town's election. So it's just an example of there's always going to be glitches in the system. It's like that in any system, but that's why you have to make it easy to vote, and that's why you have to give people more opportunity to do that, or else they'll be disenfranchised.
But prior to the gutting of Section 5, because these are, you know, in covered jurisdictions, jurisdictions like this would have been forced to make sure that they didn't conduct elections in ways that had negative impact on black participation. That no longer, you know, those prophylactic protections are no longer in place.
That was pre-cleared. The change to the North Carolina statute.
That's right.
That was pre-cleared because that was before Shelby County.
I think it's important to point out, because I don't think we brought it up, but the losing candidate in this case was black. The winning candidate was white. It was decided by 3 votes. Yeah. The precinct in question, the losing candidate won that precinct 61-9. And that precinct was closed for 2.5 hours on election day. Mm. Lost by 3 votes.
Yeah, there's not much doubt about what the impact would have been in this instance with respect to the outcome.
Well, Ted Shaw, talk about some of the other changes. I think that certainly Mike made a passing reference to some of those changes in election law, but voter ID, the length of time,
to the
registration.
Polls, Sunday voting.
Talk about them and what remind us what has been changed.
You know, so there have been measures that open up opportunities for voter participation that have been struck down by the legislature or changed, abandoned, et cetera. And many of these things have had positive impact on black voter participation. And the courts have indicated, the Fourth Circuit in the decision that you referenced made it pretty clear that it was finding that this was done with discriminatory intent. But whether we talk about Sunday voting, whether we talk about registering high school students before they come of age to vote so they already can participate once they turn 18, whether we talk about, early voting, a number of these measures have been, and of course there was the voter ID provision also, these measures have an impact on black voting strength, and it's not just serendipitous that these impacts take place. They were intended. The court found that they were intended. That's the reference to surgical precision. And there are two kinds of things going on. One is the abandonment of measures that make it easier for people to participate who are African Americans. And the other thing, of course, has been redistricting. And we're in the middle of a long-standing set of battles about redistricting. But all of this is about race and political participation.
We're talking about all of these court fights that are holding up a lot of these processes, Josh, especially for you at the Elections Board. Now, remember, this change to the elections appointment didn't take place when the North Carolina legislature became controlled by Republicans. As long as Governor McCrory was in office, that system was okay. It was when he left office and a Democrat took that the Republican legislature changed the rules. And, of course, now it's being held up in court, which means that the Elections Board, as you say, is – how do you operate now? There are elections coming up. What do you do and how can you function while this challenge is pending?
Yeah, well, our hat, the roughly 80 folks that work full-time as civil staff, not political appointees or anything, just civil staff at the Board of Elections, our hats are all off to the counties that have really stepped up for almost 300 days. They have been required under law to be unanimous on every one of their decisions, and those are bipartisan county boards. So Republicans and Democrats, they've had to step up and be unanimous in all their decision-making, and that's been fantastic. But the other group that's really stepped up has been the Wake County courts. Wake County has exclusive jurisdiction to decide anything that's percolating through our agency. And they've done that at 7 different occasions that we've had to take things to them that we ordinarily would have been able to take to our board. And Senior Resident Superior Court Judge Ridgeway and Kelly Myers over there, I know it's like the Oscars rattling off thank yous, but seriously, they have really kept continuity of operations in our electoral process.
Ted Shaw, would we be better off if the governor had just not – I mean, obviously, these are elections. This is a democracy at stake. The governor files a lawsuit and we've got an elections board that can't function. Should he not have filed the suit?
Well, I won't say that we would have been better off. I think I understand the governor's impulse to have the ability to do what his predecessor did. And just because there's a partisan change in the outcome of an election should not mean, in the minds of many at least, that the rules all of a sudden change. So a lot of this is about partisanship. A lot of it is about race. It's difficult to separate those things out. We are all watching a case in the Supreme Court this term that will decide whether or not we make a foray collectively into the area of partisan redistricting. That'll have an interesting impact that will affect jurisdictions throughout the country, including North Carolina.
Ted Shaw is a professor at the University of North Carolina School of Law and the director of the UNC Center for Civil Rights. Mike Cooper is an attorney and a writer based in North Carolina. You can find his work on Scalawag at our website, stateofthings.org. He wrote the piece about Sharpsburg election. And Josh Lawson is general counsel for the North Carolina State Board of Elections and Ethics Enforcement. All of you, thanks so much for being on the program.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find links to all of this at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, academic journals can be very expensive, and some of it is paid for by public dollars. Should there be open access? We'll talk about it on the State of Things in just a moment. Stay tuned.